This morning we're looking at Psalm 52, boasting in wickedness and trusting in God. Some trust in their riches, they engage in wicked behavior and they boast in that. Others, the righteous, trust in God. Let's read Psalm 52 together. Why boastest thou thyself in mischief, O mighty man? The loving kindness of God endureth continually. Thy tongue deviseth very wickedness, like a sharp razor working deceitfully. Thou lovest evil more than good, and lying rather than speak righteousness. Salah. Thou lovest all devouring words, O thou deceitful tongue. God will likewise destroy thee forever. He will take thee up and pluck thee out of thy tent and root thee out of the land of the living. Salah. The righteous also shall see it and fear and shall laugh at him, saying, Lo, this is the man that made not God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches and strengthened himself in his wickedness. But as for me, I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. I trust in the loving kindness of God forever and ever. I will give thee thanks forever, because thou hast done it. And I will hope in thy name, for it is good in the presence of thy saints. Psalm 52 discusses wicked individuals, and so does Psalm 53. The fool that has said in his heart, there is no God, he engages in wicked behavior. So these two psalms are similar in that they contrast wicked behavior with righteous behavior. But in Psalm 52, we have boasting in wickedness. Verse 1, why boastest thou thyself in mischief, O mighty man? And then in contrast to that, verse 8, I trust in the loving kindness of God forever. And so a number of psalms are contrasts between wicked behavior and righteous behavior. Verses 1 through 7, the boast of the wicked man. Verses 8 and 9, the trust of the godly man. And so we have to make a decision in our life which one we're going to be. Of course, the title reads for the chief musician. We have studied this before where there were those who led the temple music service and the chief musician would be one of the leaders. A mass skill, we noticed, I believe the first time that it was introduced was back in Psalm 32, that psalm dealing with forgiveness. This term means something like a contemplative psalm or a devout meditation. It intends to instruct concerning very important topics. And so a mass skill is a teaching psalm, and in this case, teaching about those who boast in their wicked behavior. Then it says, when Doeg the Edomite came and told Saul and said unto him, David has come to the house of Ahimelech. You can read about this in 1 Samuel 21 and 22, especially 1 Samuel 22, when David was on the run from Saul. He's in the house of Ahimelech in the city of Nob. And Doeg learns about it. He's one of the Saul's herdsmen, and he runs and tells Saul where he is with mischievous intent, and that is that we can go and find him there and kill David. Well, they don't kill David. They end up, Doeg ends up killing a number of priests there, just innocent individuals. He's just a very wicked, mean person. He is conniving. He is mischievous, and it certainly fits verse 1. And this may be the mighty man of verse 1 that David had in mind, or maybe Saul himself. But individuals who are saying bad things against David. And if you look at verse 2 and 3 and 4, what kind of sins does that deal with? Sins of the tongue. And so Doeg would certainly fit that. He reported things to Saul about David with malicious intent in order to, this is where we can find him and go kill him. So this psalm would certainly fit that particular story, and you can read about that in 1 Samuel 22, 6 through 13. Psalm 52 describes a contrast between the boast of the wicked man, verses 1 through 7, and the trust of the godly man, verses 8 and 9. The wicked man boasts in his mischief, verse 1, and this is still done today. People go out, engage in bad things, and sometimes they'll have a party, you know, to celebrate their mischievous deeds, and they are proud. Specific wickedness is mentioned in verses 2 through 4. He uses his tongue to destroy the godly man. He uses his tongue to say things that are wrong. But God will destroy thee forever. God is going to judge the wicked man and destroy him. And so all of his boasting, all of his pride, all of his good times are going to be judged by God. And he will be a laughingstock of the righteous. And I made mention in the notes, if you look at verse 6, the righteous shall see it, that is, the wicked man's judgment and fear, and shall laugh at him. And that appears to be some sort of vindictive spirit, but I take that to mean more along the lines that the righteous man is joyous over God's judgment of him. He's not vindictive himself, but he's joyous that God is going to judge him. And we see something similar in language to Job 22:18 through 20. And also Job 31:29. We're not supposed to be have some sort of personal vindictiveness at the downfall of our enemies, Proverbs 24:17, but this is probably more along the lines of being happy that God has judged him. And we've seen before in the Psalms where the psalmist is looking to God to judge enemies. Then, in contrast to that, the godly man will trust in God. He will flourish. And so he trusts in God, verse 8, and he flourishes like an olive tree. That's a symbol of prosperity, because he trusts in the loving kindness of God. The wicked man trusts in his the abundance of his riches, verse 7, and he strengthens himself in his wickedness, but the righteous man trusts in God and hopes in God. And because of that, he will give thanks to God and hope in God, verse 9. So that's the contrast that we're looking at in this particular psalm. Sherry, we'll start with you this morning. What does the mighty man boast in, and what endures continually? Okay. So he boasts in his evil, and then in contrast to that, the loving kindness of God continues forever. I made mention in the notes that there is one version, the NIV, because of the vowel pointing of the Hebrew language. They take that to mean his boasting endures continually. So if you have that version, you'll notice that. But most of the other major versions talk about the loving kindness of God enduring continually. And this is probably the better translation because it comes up again later in the latter part of verse 8. This man is boasting in his mischief, but I'm going to trust in the loving kindness of God. That's what endures forever. Number two, Eric, what is the tongue of the wicked man like? Okay, so like a sharp razor, it destroys and it deceives. Number three, Joyce, what does the wicked man love?
He loves evil more than good, and lying rather than speaking righteousness.
Right, and that, of course, continues to go on today, using the tongue for deceitful things. And notice in verse 4, the tongue, an inanimate object, is personified as if it is a person. O thou deceitful tongue, God will likewise destroy you. So notice the poetic device there, as if the tongue itself is a person. Mike, number 4, what does God do to the wicked man? Right, these are 4 very sort of violent descriptions of what God is going to do, and that's why we don't need to emulate that person, be envious of them, wish that we could be like them. They're going to eventually have their downfall. And when we see that in our society today, we need to be reminded of the same thing, that God will eventually judge these people and destroy them. And very violent words are used there for emphasis. Patricia, number 5, what do the righteous do when the wicked are judged? Right, so there is a fear and a respect for God's judgment, and there's also the laughing, which I've just discussed, is, I believe, the joy over God's judging them, not a personal vindication. Number 6, Mandy, what does the wicked man trust in, and what does he strengthen himself with? Right, he trusts in his riches, he strengthens himself in his wickedness. And so that's what they have in life. And that's what they revel in. And that's what they strengthen themselves in every day. But God's going to judge them. And that still goes on even today. Janus, number 7, how does the psalmist describe himself, and what does he trust in? Right. He trusts in God's loving kindness, and he is like an olive tree in God's house. He's not going to be like the wicked man who trusts in the abundance of his riches. He's going to trust in God. And in contrast to verse 5, the wicked man that is brought down, he's going to be established like a green olive tree in God's house. So it's an incentive to be righteous and not wicked. Matthew, number 8, what does the psalmist promise to do in the presence of the saints?
He says, I will thank you forever, I will wait for
you. Okay, so thanking God and hoping in God, or waiting upon God, it's a hope and trust. There, some versions have the word wait. So we're not going to be looking at this proud, boastful, wicked man and wish that we could be like him. We're going to be righteous. We're going to trust in God. We're going to thank God. We're going to hope in God in the presence of the saints. In other words, we're going to be a good example in front of the saints. We're going to be an example of faithful trust and joyous thanksgiving in the midst of these enemies. Okay, let's look at some applications. Number 1, Larry, the wicked boast in their mischief. Who are we to boast in? And what are we not to boast in? Right. We're to boast in the Lord. And that's why Paul says that Christians are taken from those who are, you know, they're not mighty, they're not rich, they're not this and that. Christians are taken from people who obey the Lord, and that's who they trust in, that's who they boast in, 1 Corinthians 1:31. We're not to boast in our glorying, or some versions say vauntings, James chapter 4 and verse 6. We need to be careful that we're not proud and boastful. Do not glory or boast in your vauntings. And in the context here, it's, I can go anywhere I want, anytime I want, and do this or that. We don't know what our life is. Our life is like a vapor. So we need to be careful that, you know, that we vaunt or build ourselves up in some way, and then glory in that. We need to be trusting in God. We're not going to boast in our mischief or wickedness, things like that. Sherry, watch your tongue. It can devise all kinds of evil. And this is a lesson we can learn from verses 2 through 4. What must we always bridle? Our tongue, and what must we refrain from speaking? Right. If we're going to live a good, righteous life, 1 Peter 3:10, we're going to have to refrain from using our tongue to speak evil. And so sins of the tongue are very common. I was just thinking about that recently, that out of all the sins, some of the most easy to commit are sins of the tongue. And so verses 2 through 4 are very important. We need to be careful that our tongue is not like a sharp razor. Okay? Eric, we must never forget that God will destroy the wicked. Verse 5, what will God do to the wicked at the end of time?
He will separate the wicked from the
just. Right. And so there is going to be a separation. And even in this life, God can bring down the wicked. But if somebody were to escape His judgment now, they're certainly going to get it in the judgment day. And so there's going to be a great separation. And we need to make sure that we're on the right side of that separation. He's not going to just let wickedness go unpunished. People in society do that, but God does not do that. Joyce, the punishment of the wicked is meant to cause the rest of the people to fear. Verse 6, what happens when sentence against evildoers is not executed speedily? Right, their heart is set on evil when they're allowed to just continue on doing their wicked behavior and people don't do anything about it. And maybe even God, for some reason, is delaying His judgment on them. It just gives them more time to set their hearts on evil. And why are sinful elders to be reproved?
So that the rest of the congregation may fear.
Fear. When there is judgment, when there is rebuke, when there is censure toward wrong behavior, other people see that and they fear. And that's what government is supposed to be with regard to society. It's so that people can fear. But when we take away punishment and judgment and things like that, then people lose their sense of fear. There's no fear. There's no teeth in the law, we say sometimes. And there's no fear of any kind of punishment. When we take away punishment in our civil procedures and things, then the hearts of men are just set on evil. And we need to remember that. And this is in the church, 1 Timothy 5. The same would be in the church, that when individuals, in the case here, elders, but it would also be in the case of withdrawing fellowship from someone who is not living properly, the rest fear. They see that it's serious. I heard of a situation one time where some members of the church were visiting and they were trying to figure out where to place membership. And the first Sunday they visited this congregation, they were withdrawing fellowship from somebody. And the visitor said, wow, this congregation is serious about, their behavior and so forth. And that was the very thing that attracted them to that congregation. They wanted to be somewhere where God's word was taken seriously. So with the right kind of people, judgment, punishment, discipline, those types of things, it helps. Okay. Mike, number 5, we must never trust in riches but make God our strength. What happens to those who trust in riches? Right, and this is the case of the rich young ruler, and he walked away. He didn't want to give up the things that he had in order to follow Jesus. And, you're just not going to be in the kingdom of God. And what will the love of money do? Right, these are Christians, and they'll stray from the faith because they have their hearts and minds set on that, and they pierce themselves through with many sorrows. And so our trust needs to be in God. It doesn't need to be in riches. Okay, Patricia, we must trust in the loving kindness of God when we are surrounded by wickedness. What did the psalmist do when he was surrounded by enemies and adversaries?
He trusted in God's mercy.
Right. And so we're going to be surrounded by that today in our society, and we just need to focus on God and His Word, His will, His character, trust in that, and that will not fail us. And we certainly are surrounded by that today. So the Psalms can help us even with modern society and some of the similar things that we have to go through today. Mandy, we need to make the promise, I will. The psalmist says, I will give thanks, I will hope. Notice those promises. And we need to be like that today. What did Paul do always? He always thanked God. And that's a great example there. In the different circumstances he was in, good or bad, some of it was imprisonment and so forth, he's always thanking God for God's blessings and for brethren and other things like that. And what are we not to put our hope in? What's that? Yeah, the uncertainty of riches, but we are to hope in what? The living God, right. So, some of these same principles we find in the New Testament. Any question or comments or observations there? Okay. Let's sing our Psalm 52, and then we're going to, if you want to turn over to Psalm 32, we're going to start there and pick up our review again. We're going to start doing some review. We have this class period and our next class period, and maybe we can have some time to go back and look at some of these Psalms. But let's sing some of the wording to Psalm 52. This is to the tune of All Hail, the Power of Jesus' Name. Why boast yourself, O mighty man, of evil and of wrong? The loving kindness of our God is present all day long. The loving kindness of our God is present all day long. You with your subtle tongue have planned destruction to complete. Your tongue a sharpened razor is, a worker of deceit. Your tongue a sharpened razor is, a worker of deceit. You cherish evil more than good and falsehood more than right. You cherish all devouring words, O tongue which lies delight. You cherish all devouring words, O tongue which lies delight. Forever God will pull you down, will seize you with His hand, will tear you from your dwelling place, uproot you from the land, will tear you from your dwelling place, uproot you from the land. The righteous will behold and fear, will laugh at him and say, behold the man who would not make our God his strength and stay. Behold Our God is strength and stay. This is the man who placed his trust in wealth's abundant store, and in the evil he desired confirmed himself the more, and in the evil he desired confirmed himself the more. But I within the house of God am like an olive tree, and in the steadfast love of God my trust shall ever be. And in the steadfast love of God my trust shall ever be. Forever I will give thee thanks, what thou hast done proclaim, in presence of thy godly ones. I'll wait on thy good name. In presence of thy godly ones, I'll wait on thy good name. Some good thoughts there that we need to think about. Come back with me to Psalm 32, and we'll just do a little reviewing with our time left. Of course, Psalm 32 is that great psalm of forgiveness, where the psalmist seeks to be forgiven. It may have been the occasion of David's sin with Bathsheba. And it's called a penitential psalm. It's one of seven penitential psalms in the book of Psalms dealing with sin and forgiveness. And blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. And it's a great psalm that we need to be reading from time to time. It helps us with our, to have a humble attitude toward forgiveness. So the blessedness of forgiveness. Blessed is the man unto whom Jehovah imputeth not iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no guile. So we need to be forgiven each day, and we need to seek that and ask for that and follow God's plan for that. Look at Psalm 33. Psalm 33, rejoice in the Lord. Verse 1, rejoice in the Lord. Verse 21, our heart shall rejoice in him. This is a psalm calling people to come together to praise God. And in verses 4 through 19, there are several reasons why, several causes why we should be praising God. And this is the great psalm that mentions the word of the Lord, that where he spake, Genesis 1 and verse 1, he spake and it was done, he commanded and it stood fast, where God created the earth with his word. So it causes us to rejoice in the Lord. He's praised for being a creator, and he's praised for preserving his creation. Look at Psalm 34. The Lord delivers the righteous. There are several verses in this psalm that speak of deliverance. Verse 4, and delivered me from all my fears. Verse 7, and delivered them. Verse 17, and delivered them out of their troubles. Verse 19, the Lord delivered him. And so we need to remain faithful to God. We need to live righteous lives, and he will take care of us. He will help us through even difficult circumstances. And this is the psalm Not a bone was broken that is applied to Jesus on the cross. It's always good to go back and look at those psalms that are quoted in the New Testament. And there are several of them that are quoted with regard to the life and death of Christ and resurrection. Psalm 16, "You will not leave my soul in Sheol," and so forth. Let's look at Psalm 35, a prayer for rescue from enemies. This idea of being helped with enemies is very common in the Psalms. And whether it was David or someone else that was surrounded by enemies, there are several Psalms that deal with that. Lord, help me with that. And so we need to read these types of Psalms when we feel like we are being hurt in some way by things in the world. And it causes us to be brought closer to God. This is an imprecatory psalm where David calls upon judgment upon his enemies. But God will rescue the psalmist from his enemies. Psalm 36. Psalm 36 is that contrast psalm, the iniquity of men in contrast to the loving kindness of God. In the first four verses, the iniquity of men, and then verses 5 through 9, the loving kindness of God. So there's a contrast here. This is one of those teaching psalms or didactic psalms, and several of the teaching psalms deal with a contrast between wicked men and righteous men, or wicked men and God. So there's contrasts going on. I left it out. I think that was one that we talked about, and I was going to go back and put that in. And I don't know if I need to revise that. But verse 5 is the dividing point where we've been talking about the wickedness of men, and then all of a sudden the loving kindness of God. One thing that we might say by way of a key verse would be verse 10. Verse 10 and 11 kind of summarizes, "O continue thy loving kindness unto them that know thee, and thy righteousness to the upright in heart." That would summarize verses 5 through 9. "And let not the foot of pride come against me, and let not the hand of the wicked drive me away." That would summarize verses 1 through 4. And so verses 10 and 11 summarize this iniquity of man or wickedness of man and the loving kindness of God. And I need to go back and, when I make a revision, put that in as the key verses there.
When you mentioned that place we said to rescue, you said verses 10 through 12.
Okay. And I remember saying something along the lines that those verses summarize everything that has gone on before. And so I'll go back in and do that. Thank you. I'd forgotten to make a note on that. Look at Psalm 37. This is that psalm that we spent some time on, even in a sermon, "The meek shall inherit the earth." This is that psalm that is talking about how the righteous are going to be secure in the land. They'll be blessed by God, but the wicked are going to be taken away, and there's insecurity with the wicked. And it basically, it is a psalm to get Israel to stay focused on living right and not be looking out at these wicked people and all of their prosperity, and it looks like they're gaining advantage and they're getting ahead. In the long run, God makes sure that they're judged and taken off the land. And so there are several verses here in Psalm 37 where it's contrasting the security of the righteous and the insecurity of the wicked. Verse 9 is one of several. "For evildoers shall be cut off, but," there's your contrast, "but those who wait for Jehovah, they shall inherit the land." And so this secure life of the righteous, the insecure life of the wicked. And this is that well-known psalm that deals with "the meek shall inherit the earth" that is quoted by Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. Verse not coming back to live on a restored earth after the judgment day, but inheriting the earth as you go down through the context, it means living a peaceful life, the righteous life of the Israelite who's living a peaceful life and being blessed. He's allowed to live in his inheritance that God had promised Abraham. Okay, let's look at Psalm 38. Psalm 38. Here we have a suffering sinner, and he's suffering. And he opens up with, your arrows stick fast in me. He believes that he's being judged by God. And so the supplication and sorrow of a suffering sinner. He prays to God. He realizes that he has caused himself problems because of his sin. Verse 5, my wounds are loathsome and corrupt because of my foolishness. And so when we sin and when we don't act right, we're going to bring problems into our life and into the lives of those around us. And we just need to admit that and recognize that many people don't. And many people are having it really hard in life, but it's because they're bringing it upon themselves by the way they live. Their choices, their habits that they choose, their personal choices in life, they're causing themselves physical problems and other kinds of problems, and especially spiritual problems. And the psalmist recognizes it because of my foolishness, and he wants to get out of that. He wants to change that. He wants God to forgive him of that. And that's a great attitude, and we even need to have that attitude ourselves. So verses 3 through 5, he recognizes that it's his own iniquity and sin and foolishness that's causing this. And he wants, look at verse 8, 18, I will declare my iniquity and I will be sorry for my sin. So that needs to be our attitude. I've gotten myself in this mess. I need to get out of it. And I admit it, and I want to be helped with that. It's a great psalm from that standpoint. Okay, let's look at Psalm 39. The vanity of life, how brief life really is. And that's why we need to make sure that we're right with God and we have our affairs in order. Life is brief. It's just, it's vanity. It's altogether vanity. Verse 5. Make me to know the measure of my days. Verse 4. We're like a vapor, James says. And so we've got one life to live and we need to make it count. And we need to make sure that we're right with God. So, the vanity of life, how brief life really is. And so verse 5 is a great key. My days are as handbreadths. Remember we talked about a handbreadth is equal to about 3 or 4 inches, just the width of your hand, and it was used as a measurement. So life is like the span of just 3 or 4 inches, just very short span. And so let's make sure that our life is right with God. And that would be a good psalm to read from time to time to remind us of how brief life really is. Let's look at Psalm 40. Psalm 40 is just simply praise and prayer. There's a time to praise God. There's a time to pray to God. And so the psalmist praises the Lord for his past deliverances, and he prays to the Lord for his present deliverances. And so praise and prayer. Look at Psalm 41. That ends what we call book one. Psalm 41 ends book one. This is similar to Psalm 38, where you have a suffering person. In this case, there's physical illness. He's physically sick. Verse 3. He also has his friends who are against him, verse 9. And this is the verse 9 that is quoted by Jesus and applied to Judas. My familiar friend has lifted up his heel against me. So what does the psalmist do when he has physical illnesses? He's surrounded by enemies and false friends. What does he do? He prays to God. And so that's what we can do today, and that's what we need to be doing. That rounds out book one, Psalm 42. Let's turn to Psalm 42. Psalm 42 and 43, if you remember, we took both of these psalms together. The reason we did that was Psalm 42:5, Psalm 42:11, and Psalm 43:5 all say the same thing. And so it may have been that these were originally just one psalm. Instead of 11 verses, it would be 11 plus 5 or 16 verse psalm. But longing for God, this is the well-known, we get our song in our songbook, as a deer pants for the water, so my soul longs after you. It's taken from Psalm 42:1, longing after God, longing for His presence, longing for His loving kindness, longing for His help. And this would be from one of the sons of Korah, one of the Levites in the temple music service. So longing for God. Okay, Psalm 44. We'll do one more and then we'll quit here this morning. Past triumphs and present troubles. God helped Israel in the past. The example given there, verse 3, when they were coming into Canaan land and with Joshua and all of that. But now they have present problems and they're surrounded by enemies and they need God's help in the present. And this is called a communal lament because it's one man, but he's speaking on behalf of all of Israel. Notice verse 1, we have heard with our ears, and it's we and our and us. And so it's called a communal, meaning the community, the nation of Israel is crying out to God for help during their present troubles. There's past triumphs, verses 1 through 8. There's present troubles, verses 9 through 22. It may have been some surrounding enemy in the days of David, Edom, Moab, Ammon, something like that. And or later after David, and then they're going to trust in God, verses 23 through 26. So rise up and help us. You helped us in the past. Can you please help us in the present? Okay, we'll close with that this morning. Thank you for your time and attention. And if somebody will remind me, if I don't remember, let's pick up at Psalm 45.